that is full. And so there are a few sort of philosophically negative aspects of loving totally. There's no real totality without marriage. That was one of our questions. There can be shared attractions, desires, or emotions, but those are not enough. Marriage is when we make this commitment of the totality of who we are to somebody else for the rest of our life. It doesn't mean we lose our own identity, or meld into each other, or give up healthy boundaries, or let ourselves be abused. The totality that's required is not that we become a punching bag or a verbal punching bag. It's not that we're in a relationship in which people hurt each other. That's not the totality. But it is that we're committed to these when we enter on in for the rest of our life. If there's a violent situation for us or for children or things like this, then that's obviously sufficient grounds for separation. The worst thing we could do is become an occasion for somebody else sinning or hurting another human being. That's not what fully is. But what fully requires is this attempt at peace and forgiveness. Even if continued cohabitation wouldn't be possible with proof. We must accept the whole of the other, including the parts that annoy us or that we wish were different. So many people go into marriage thinking that they're going to change the other, and then getting really frustrated when the person doesn't really adequately change. We have to accept the value of the person. It doesn't mean that we're not praying for the person to change and grow, but we can't go in expecting. That's a reservation. A long married person, the person that actually changes, and a marriage might be valid. Love and Responsibility, this book by St. John Paul II, said that if you take away the fullness of self-surrender and the completeness of personal commitment, what remains will be a total denial and negation of that commitment. We don't think that way, but this happens a lot in making love with use of contraception, which we'll talk about tomorrow morning. I accept every part of you, except the part of you that could be a mother. In a very act of need, by God, for you to become a mother. I accept you totally, except that part of you that could become a dad in the very act, really, for you to become a dad. You're rejecting the very act in which you're supposed to be put in the body language, which you said in words before you go. That corrodes love, it doesn't keep love. It hurts the love that's already there. But there are other examples too, when we're really not accepting parts of the other. We just refuse to. We refuse to accept, for example, that he loves his mother and is going to care for her, even though the mother has made the wife's life miserable. And it becomes a huge contest to choose one way or the other. There's got to be a priority there, but he's got a double duty to each. And so you're going to accept this part, even if it might be unpleasant. Because what eventually happens is there's a negation of that total love when we start to say we're just going to only partially love, only the love of God. This is challenging. I'm not pretending this is easy, but John Paul II is right here. What is the problem confronting forms of love? First, it's this problem of giving partially because one is divided. There are lots of trust issues, especially today because people have been moved in so many times to broken homes, so they're not really sure if the other person is going to keep a commitment to life. And so one kind of hedges the bets. A failure to appreciate properly and give and receive with regard to the fullness of the respective masculine and feminine. The parts of the other that are different from you, to accept that, to try to accommodate. You know, I always have couples that celebrate major anniversaries with their secret ones. Is it like to pass on these pearls to other couples that are preparing? Because I don't know, sometimes young couples don't think that a chaste celibate priest knows anything about marriage. Even though we've come from families, and even though we probably have the greatest second-hand experience than any of them because we deal with so many couples. And in ways that Titus never had, by the way, because we hear confessions too. So I always ask these couples, what's your secret? There's one couple celebrating the 50th anniversary. Nikki and Donnie were their names. And their secret was, our favorite expression is, honey, you got your way the last time. I want you to get your way again. Now the typical logic is you got your way the last time. My turn. We watched, we can't even sell you the last time. Now it's time for Terminator 3. Whatever. No, you got your way the last time. Because I love you, I want you to get your way. And when both in the couple is saying this, that's when they can have a really beautiful marriage. If they're both trying to outdo each other in sacrificial love, rather than keeping score. In that first letter to Corinthians, when St. Paul's given the scriptures of love, he says, it rejoices in love, it rejoices in the truth, not in wrongdoing. It doesn't keep count, it doesn't keep score. You hurt me, now I hurt you. You got your way, now it's mine. Taking rather than giving, using rather than loving. We're in a culture in which we are trained to be people. And in couples, sometimes too, this can happen. A lack of honesty, hiding, keeping critical information once the unsaid, that would fit with the reservations that we talked about. Sometimes, whether shame or secrets, you just don't tell anybody the real truth. It's an issue. Transparency, honesty is important. It doesn't mean we share our confessional material with people. God's love comes first, and there's something prior there. But it doesn't mean we want to be as sincere as we possibly can. Prenuptial agreements, for example, are a classic case of failing to give oneself over. It's an escape clause built on him. The only prenuptial that would work would be the rare case in which, let's just say, for example, two people had already been married, their wives and husbands died from marrying each other, and because of all the stuff that they had set for their families, they couldn't sign a prenuptial that would say this, upon my death, this is what I want to happen to my assets. That's okay. A couple can mutually agree. That they'll give their assets to their first families of origin rather than have a shifted. Something like that's fine, but it can't be upon our divorce, this is what I want to have, because that's not total love. Polygamy is obviously a violation of this whole giving to another. Polygamy is a problem in this world, and it's coming back. So it's still an issue in various places in Africa. In Canada, just 2 days ago, we saw two guys were convicted who are part of the Mormon breakout group. One had 24 wives, another had 5 wives. It's a clear, one isn't committing himself, but what's happened with the redefinition of marriage is marriage now means anything we want. Doesn't mean one man and one woman until death with all this life. And so there's no logical stop to say that it's got to be just one person. There's no logical stop. Got some precedence in the rest of it, but it's going to come back because that's what lust kind of wants. Lust wants to have various people being needs rather than just one. In case one of the various women don't work out, or one of the various men. That I'm going to die for, because it's totally against the real meaning of love. Let's get to part 3. Loving faithfully and exclusively. Blessed Paul VI said in an epitaph that love is faithful and exclusive of all others until death. That's the real meaning of love. Love is faithful, and narrow love is exclusive. We will love one person differently than we will love anybody else. Because we're loving in body. Because we're loving in a primordial way. Because we're loving in a reciprocal way that's public with all the students. We only do that with one at a time, say fossil, sequential, generic. God's love is this case of God's love, which is faithful and irrevocable, as we see with Jesus. He loved us to the end. He was faithful, even when we were unfaithful. Spouses have the ability to share in and represent this type of faithful love. I love some of the Psalms in which he has a litany about God's love. We say a statement, and then we say, for his love endures forever. And another statement, for his love endures forever. And a third statement, for his love endures forever. And then it can go on to hundreds of verses, because God's love really does endure forever. And what the Jews were always doing with those Psalms, like Psalm 136, because God has shown this fidelity all the way throughout salvation history, they were doing to bring them into the present, because God's going to be taking them out. Even if they're in exile in Babylon, even if they're going through the worst day of their life, the same Lord who's done all of this is still loving faithfully now. And that's what we give them confidence. Sometimes we need to write our own 136 about all that the Lord has goodness has done for us over the course of time. Because the same Lord who has loved us and all of those instruments is loving us still. The third statement of attention is, will you love and honor your repentant spouse for the rest of your life? When I prepare couples for this, canonically, I start with for the rest of your life. Because this is a problem today. Most couples have a fairy tale idea of for the rest of your life. They're coming, hoping that this is going to live happily ever after. And they're not intending ever to break this off. They're intending to die married. But deep down inside, what they really mean by this is, well, of course we're going to love each other for the rest of our life. And because we love each other, we will live as husband and wife for the rest of our life. But if we lose that loving feeling, if something happens in our marriage, then that's when it ends. We're telling somebody in a question about the focus test that we are giving the guys over, which is a series of a couple hundred questions to see how the couples communicate a lot about a lot of the more important things in their relationship. I would give this entire exercise to any couple for just question 142 in the original survey. Question 142 was, if my future spouse is ever unfaithful to me, under no circumstances would I reconcile. I've reviewed several hundred couples for marriage over the course of the priesthood. In 95% of the cases, I had at least one, but in many cases, both say, I agree with that statement. That if my future spouse is ever unfaithful to me, under no circumstances would I reconcile. And I would always then say, well, thank you for your honesty. But do you realize that on your wedding day, and then I point to the photo of the Pope on the wall, John Paul and the early priest of Benedict in the middle of now Pope Francis. Not even being married. And they're kind of shocked. I said, because remember, you're going to commit to yourself in your vow that you're going to love each other for worse, sicker, and poorer too, all the days of your life. And probably adultery would hit the classic definition of what you think would be the worst. And if you are saying that under no circumstances would you even attempt reconciliation, you don't mean that you are giving yourself and receiving the other in worse, sicker, or poor for the rest of your day. So your vows will be valid. So I said, what did you learn from this? See how devastating it helped you to be in your marriage. Don't take it lightly. That's the time I turn to the guys specifically, looking straight in the eyeballs, and I say, looking at porn is adultery. As Jesus says, the one who has looked at a woman with lust in his eyes has already committed adultery. And she'll treat it that way, I say. 95% of couples would have their marriage as an adultery from the beginning if I weren't doing my job. If the focus was to bring it up and helping them, they said, if this would ever happen, it might be the biggest challenge you have ever faced in your life. you might not be able to save continued gravitational thrust. Like, you'd be so destroyed that you can't recover. But you've at least got to say, as the Lord forgives me, I'm going to put in 1,000% of my effort to try to forgive. And if you've got that, I might not be able to overcome the problem, but I'm going to give it everything I've got. Then you can be married. A lot of the times, couples don't have the for the rest of your life. Then I ask them to define what love and honor means. Love, by this point, with the essay to know, is a total gift of oneself to another. It's willing the other's good for the sake of the other, not for one's own sake. So I say, if you're going to be able to keep this intention for the rest of your life, then I'd like you to examine yourself every day for the rest of your life of whether you're sacrificing yourself out of love for your spouse. At the end of the day, you should be able to look back at the day and say, what sacrifice have I made? Because you just can't keep this by saying I'm not intending to break it. This is a real commitment. That you're going to lay down your life for each other every day for the rest of your life. So how's that going to show? And obviously it would mean that nothing that would be contrary to love, you're going to bring in your marriage. So you've got somebody on the side, for example. You're not consistent with loving for the rest of your life because you're not really loving today. You're not loving today. If you think that if she gives you lip, if you make her lip bleed, you're not loving. You're not choosing consistent with love. Second, honor. Most people don't know what honor is unless it serves a little bit. When I ask them to define honor as a verb, most people say a very weak word. Means we respect each other. See, no, it goes way beyond respect. To honor each other means truly to reverence each other. Means to praise each other. Means to put up on a pedestal. Means to say, you didn't have to do this, but you did, and I want to thank you for it. This is what happens, for example, when firemen are teaching your employees of mine are honored. You went beyond the call, and I'm going to thank you for it. It's the exact opposite of taking something for granted. What normally happens in a marriage is the typical trajectory. Most couples love a lot about each other. Let's just take the stat of 85%. They love 85% of each other, but that 15% really ignores them. When they're engaged, they're focused on the 85%. When they start to get married and they come back to the husband, they're starting to live with this every day. This 15%, even though it's only 15%, that's all they begin to focus on. It becomes a wedge that the devil's able to kick deeper and deeper and deeper into the bargain. Such that it becomes sometimes all consuming. Am I going to have to spend the next 50 or 60 years having to pick up his smelly socks? Am I going to wait until Jesus comes again until I'm able to get to that bathroom? Whatever it is, we can start to focus on what we don't like. Let's just say the wife cooks. Eventually the husband can say, the beans are cold. Rather than saying thank you for the last 2 hours, to prepare this beautiful lunch, this beautiful dinner. To honor somebody, you need to make a commitment every day. To praise the other. To say thanks to the other. To really lift the other person up. Truthfully. Because people need that support. We can sometimes, rather than be a spouse's president of Pancroft, we can become the chief critic. And that can really harm marriages. And I say to couples, you're making a commitment every day for the rest of your life to honor each other. So right now, can you look back over the last 24 hours or last week and come to mind the things by which you really honor the other person? And similarly, you can't be intending to do anything in marriage that would dishonor. You can't be planning to be Chinese or Russian spy. It's a real example. You can't be doing types of things that are going to bring dishonor to you. That you're making some extra money on the side as a drug dealer or whatever else. Are you intent to honor each other? The rest of your life is really talking about faithful and exclusive. positive characteristics of faithfulness to His love. First one is, God wants us to be like Him, someone who keeps our promises. God makes a covenant and He doesn't go back on it. And we need to be people of our word, not proudly, but humbly. No matter how our feelings change, if you remember what we were talking about with love and responsibility in various stages of love, our desires can change, our attractions can change, our feelings that used to be sympathetic can be antipathetic. They can start not to feel the same way. All of those things can change. But if we made a real commitment to each other, it's supposed to be a commitment with no expiration date on it. It's a covenant, similar to God's covenant. In order for this to happen, there's got to be positive acts of faithfulness. Say that we're going to be faithful doesn't mean we're not going to be unfaithful. I remember in working with the Portuguese sometimes, many of the people would form in a way that they would come and say, for example, to me, I don't cheat, I don't kill no one, I don't hurt no one, I don't lie to no one. But a lot of times they didn't do the positive aspects. Just like, so they don't come to mass. Even though they're not serial killers, they don't come to mass. And just said, the one guy was asking for a sponsorship today, after being in a parish for 6 years and still didn't know my name. He came to the door and was dressed like this and said, yeah, I want to speak to the priest. I said, you're a lucky man. I just didn't know that I was the priest. And I had been there for 6 years. And he was, you know, he wanted a sponsor to take to the godfather. I said, you got to work with you because you got to be practicing habit. It means you got to be practicing. And start practicing over the course of 2 months and I'll be able to give you one. Provided everything else is fine. Just like, well, I don't have time for this and all the rest of it. I tried to get him to say, do you actually love God at all? You're supposed to love Him with all your mind, heart, soul, and strength, but can you make any time for God? Is God more important than watching soccer from Portugal on Sunday? It's not about not doing simple stuff. God positively to show that to faith. Little things of saying a yes to affirm the spouse, to affirm the fidelity, to show each day that you choose. I've got one of the greatest jobs in the world before I started the United Nations. I'm a chaplain to the Sisters of Life, this new religious community in New York. One of the things that I always say to them and other religious when I teach retreats is, you need to renew your vows every day. Renew them. Choose again. If God chooses us every day. And so this statement is a positive access. Commit yourself to heaven. Anew each day. Show your faith. Show your love. Say, choose you again today to be my husband. Choose you again today to be my wife. Some days that's going to be harder than others. But show it every day, and on the harder days, it'll be much easier than it would be if you're not. Likewise, you can say no to the things that are not consistent with fidelity. A lot of the time, that maybe this is going to show with the reordered priorities. One couple that I prepared for marriage, one of their biggest struggles was he just loved to fish too much. They both had difficult jobs during the week, but every Saturday he wanted to go all day with his buddies to fish. And there's nothing wrong with fishing. But at a practical level, it was putting the fish ahead of their marriage because on Sundays they would visit each other's family. They didn't have much time together. And all she was asking for was every other Saturday. But he resisted. And it's just like, do you mean that you love her when you said it before me in church? Do you mean it? When we talked about love, I said, when you die, you work. And then he would have said no. And I said, you said what? He said, yes. I said, what did you say? He said, yes. Okay. Well, then kill your rod 2 weeks a month. If you're going to jump on a grenade for it, you take a bullet for it, but you won't. Not fish for her. You don't mean it now. Little acts of hell. We've got to be faithful in thought, word, and action. Are we faithful in our thoughts? Or do our minds wander? toward somebody else, toward some other situation. A Calvin, get me out of here type of moment. Are we faithful in our words? You know, a lot of the times we say to those we love the most things we would never say to the church. We say some pretty harmful things. Are we faithful in the way that we speak to each other? Do our words show that we really love? We do them with the tone that we would use to the Lord or to the person that we actually love the most. Sometimes the persuasion builds. We become somebody that we would never choose to be. The more we speak to each other the right way, the more faithful we can be. You know, I try to tell people in terms of the habits of being born. Most of us would never be tempted, ever, to go into the church at the pulpit in the middle of Mass and start to actually pray. We were never doing it. It's totally under our character. Never did. Most of us would never choose to beat up and miss a little baby. And we would never choose to do it. But a lot of the times, we will treat each other in ways that we would never do if we thought about it. Would you ever intend to be verbally abusive to yourself? Nobody would go in and say, I want to do it. But some of the times, just that out, we can say the nasty things. We need to speak with some reverence to each other. That speaking in an irreverent way would be as unlikely as going over into Christ's cathedral and F1ing the entire congregation. That there's these little things of reverence. And in action, they're faithful in action. That we're doing positive actions together. That we're choosing to put the other first. Choosing to remain faithful, and then obviously excluding things that are contrary to God. And at the same time, we're being faithful to God, who has made a commitment to be faithful to us all our days. There are some philosophically negative characteristics of faithfulness. It can seem difficult and impossible to bind himself for life in a human being. Let's face it, it is scary. It is a teacher. It's a blank check. But it's one in which God is a co-signer. He'll give his help over the course of it. And our life won't be fulfilled unless we take that risk. Prudent risk, right person, all the rest of it. But it is a negative characteristic where you have to be daring to make that commitment. God rewards that courage. It involves guarding from heart, eye, body, and keeping one's erotic love exclusively for the spouse. Exclusively for the spouse. One of the challenges of many young couples today is with the guys. The guys think that they can retain friendships with the women with whom they've been friends before, including girlfriends. I've uncovered this over and over again. And the women know that, especially if they had some type of intimate relationship, that he's going to be vulnerable to her. And yet, no matter how many times she asks, he's still texting, he's still Facebook messaging, and the whole rest of it. And it can really ruin their marriages. And some of the times, guys say, well, we're not sleeping together. Back off! Why don't you trust me? And even if they say, well, I don't necessarily trust her, but in your vulnerability, listen, you may be good, but sometimes you just don't get it. We need to be willing to jump on these grenades or take these types of bullets when there would be even a slight danger to the marital. And there is a vulnerability of people with whom we've had a serious relationship before. It's just a fact. We need to be willing, out of fidelity, to be able to make a choice that a yes to one person does mean no to others. It means fighting and avoiding temptations toward loss. The devil constantly tries to start with whatever opens the hands. We need to recognize that when we're struggling, that's when we're most vulnerable. As a priest, you know, there's, everybody knows this. Most streets don't leave with supermodels. Most streets leave with women who have already been married in a difficult marriage or divorce. Why did that happen? It happens because this woman who comes to see him has often just not been appreciated, or she's been abused, or whatever else. And finally, she's in front of a man who treats her with dignity, and so she's grateful. Likewise, his masculine capacity as a protector, as someone who wants to tell this woman who was said, "You're the ugliest woman that I've ever met," "You're not ugly." He starts making up for what this woman did receive and should have received. And over the course of time, a bond comes to the woman. And that's when the devil, like a ball of constrictor, starts trying to wrap them tighter and tighter. He can have a far greater guard with a supermodel. But it starts in the midst of his housework, and that's sometimes where it begins. Likewise, we have to be, everybody has to be aware of that. Avoiding temptations, recognizing the irritation, recognizing that somebody else might be vulnerable or falling for you. And the more we allow that to happen, the harder it is for us to extricate ourselves, because we don't want to hurt somebody else's feelings, and that can lead to other things. And also just simply, I have to say today, no flirting. There are some people who got good over the course of time with lines that are flirtatious, complimentary. Some take it as their self-identity, that they want to tell every woman how beautiful she is, that every woman can receive it the same way that you like. But flirting is kind of soft if they're safe. There's a way to treat others with reverence, with kindness, without flirting. There's even a way to say something, "You look really nice today. I just want to compliment you, just told you, Jade." There's a way to flirt. And when you're married, you give up being cast in. Problems challenging faithful and exclusive love. First is infidelity. There's rampant infidelity on the internet and spawns. Everybody's doing it, it's a little bit easier. There are now websites totally dedicated to facilitating couples cheating on each other. Untrustworthiness is a big problem. A lot of times people just haven't been trustworthy in little things, and if they can get married, they take in that untrustworthiness. Pornography is huge. Studies show us that 80% of men use pornography once a month or more in the United States. 80%. This is still in our mind with images. And eventually, people become addicted. The sites tell us that pornography addiction is more addictive than cocaine. So it's stuck. You should need to keep going further and further into the images, because what used to give you a high before no longer gives you the same high. And it can destroy your marriage. Many times when husbands come and you're traced back, infidelity in the flesh, it began in infidelity in the heart, began with pornography. And eventually it just kept going down. And so as a priest, I can't say more, I can't say enough, that porn is poison and it will destroy. The devil works so easily for porn. Why? Because the devil's biggest game is to destroy love. Made in the image and likeness of God is love. And the way to destroy love is by turning love, L-O-P, into L-U-P. Turn it into lust. So if he can corrode something good, he will. And that's what he does. Some of the times guys don't get the message. My experience as a professional, though, is, you know, the abuse that these girls who are in photos or are in videos, the abuse that they suffer is enormous, and many of them are trafficking victims. Many of them are actually not slaves. There's no choice in that. And when guys, I have had guys vomit in a confession when they've realized that they may have been taking advantage of slavery. When I was pastoring in Bedford, Massachusetts, I got a call one afternoon that the police were behind my church next to the dumpster. So I wanted to know to see what the issue was. Whether somebody lit the dumpster on fire or whatever else. But I knew that the dumpster had been empty that morning. So I doubted there was a fire. So I walk around and I see who's there. And two people were brought out of the dumpster. They were working a trick in the dumpster. That is the most degrading thing I've ever seen. Police officer came to me and said to me, "She's a minor fire." And I said, "Officer, we know each other. I don't really know what that means. She's not here alone, we will." I said, "She's a slave. You're catching on fire." I said, "So what do you need to do?" I said, "I'm just book her so that we can go down to the station later, release her, and get her far away from Bedford." He said, "You're a quick learner, Father." I said, "You just let me speak to her first." So I went over and I asked, because she was from Guatemala, I asked to speak Spanish, not all the Guatemalans do. She said, "See." So I said to her in Spanish, "I'm going to have to yell at you because I know that somebody's watching. We're going to take you down in the police. We're going to arrest you. But in an hour, I will come down. We're going to release you. And we're going to bring the fire over to this bag." And she started to cry. As soon as she started to cry, so that whoever it was, I just started screaming at the top of my lungs, "What have you done to me? Not realizing this is a church. This is God's holy place. You're desecrating my work in this church. Here in this dumpster." And the whole rest of it went down, got her across the state. But she was trapped in there. I never realized that at first, that many of them were slaves. I just thought they were drug addicts. Likewise with porn. It's got to stop. Guys, you've got to speak to your guy friends. It just helps them to get liberated. 80%, 4 out of 5 men use it at least once a month. And so the odds are good that the guys that you can help with, many of them will use it. It'll destroy them. It'll hurt their marriages. Could end up changing their marriages. And it does so much harm to so many. Adultery and extramarital affairs is huge damage. Some marriages cannot recover. We need to praise those who forgive and forgive and give the person a second chance. Because God gives us constantly a second chance. But it's really hard. Forms of online chatting are against this faithful and exclusive. Sexting. Some of these chat rooms. Past relationships that are basically unfaithful in advance. When I'm preparing teenagers, when I'm speaking to teens, it's just, you want your future husband to have 157 partners before you come. Do you think he wants you to have slept around? No. And maybe you think infidelity to your future spouse, that you're going to be faithful to him in advance, you're faithful to her in advance. But this rampant infidelity prior to marriage, in every way, thought and deed and action, that thought, word, and action matters to marriage. One of the big problems with infertility today, nobody's really going to tell you this in our culture, it's inside the womb, there are antibodies that are formed against second and third and fourth and fifth body. Curiously, by design of God, not in the first. And so what happens is if somebody slept around, by the time she makes love with her husband, her own body attacks the husband's sperm. Everybody should know about this. Nobody's really told. And that is past wounds that may be difficult to trust. It's a real issue. That if someone's been betrayed by others, they begin to wonder when the other shoe's going to drop in a marriage. So they're insecure. And that insecurity can lead to other stresses and issues. we're done. So let's finish with prayer. Tomorrow we're going to do the last session, which is loving truthfully, and it'll begin again with whatever questions you want to write down and leave for me about any issues dealing with marriage or prayer elsewhere. We'll have the dramatic conclusion tomorrow at 9:15. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, glory to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be.